I'm having a goddamn blast on tour with this Big Mouth and a Small Town tour. So I've added some dates and wanted to let you know where I'm headed next. March 14th, I will be in Lakeside, Arizona. And then the 15th and 16th, I'm finally coming to Tucson. So if you're in Tucson, I'm coming to Laughs Comedy Cafe. Get your tickets. We're going to have a good time. My good friend Noah Kopfer will be featuring at those shows. He'll also be with me the following weekend when I come to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Dr. Grins, I cannot wait to see you guys again. Those are always some of my favorite shows, and I'm sure this year will be no exception. And then I am headed up to my home state of Alaska for the Alaska Before You Die Fest. Anchorage, you better not fucking sit on these tickets. They're going fast. There's a few left. April 5th, I will be doing shows at the Gumbo House. It's downtown. I'm doing an early and a late show, one night only. It's an intimate venue, so tickets are limited. It's going to be out of control. If you've come to my show at Coots before, you know how fun they are. This venue is so much better for comedy. I can't even explain it. Just get fucking tickets. These shows are going to be wild. And then on the 6th, I'm headed down to Homer, Alaska. I am coming, performing there for the first time. Alice's Champagne Palace. And then on the 7th, I will be in Seward, Alaska. So Anchorage, Homer, Seward, we're having a goddamn good time. I'm going to come kill it all those shows because I'm a fucking Alaskan assassin. Am I sorry I said that? I don't know. Listen, Dayton, Kentucky, 12th of April. If you are in the Cincinnati-ish area, Dayton, Ohio, Dayton, Kentucky, this is your chance to see me at a really cool new venue called the Commonwealth Sanctuary. And then I am headed to Portland, May 3rd. I'm headlining the Rip City Comedy Festival. I will be at McMenamin's Mission Theater. You guys, this is a cool theater. We want it to be packed out because of course I want it to be packed out. But also, like, let's have a goddamn good time in this nice, beautiful theater. So come to that. It's going to be a hell of a time. I can't wait to come back to Portland. And then Wisconsin, I'm headed back your way. But this time I'm coming to Janesville, May 17th and 18th. Green Bay on the 19th. And then what up, Florida? St. Pete, Tampa. I'm coming your way. Tampa, I will be there June 2nd. And St. Pete, they're ahead of that, May 31st. Tampa, I'm at Side Splitters. And if you go to the links in all of my bios or go to their website to get tickets, for a limited time, you can use the code JMS and get $5 off tickets. And wherever you are, I'm trying to get people to buy tickets early instead of waiting to the last minute and making me panic, so that if it is going to sell out, it sells out faster, so that I know that, the club knows that, maybe we can add a second show. It just FYI, that helps every artist that you're a fan of. So if you can ever buy ASAP, go ahead and do that. So that's your incentive to buy early in Tampa. And I'll be adding more dates soon. If you did not hear your town, but you want me to come there, head over to my Instagram, instagram.com/JMS Comedy, or just at JMS Comedy if you're using the app like most of us. Click the link in my bio, join my email list. That lets me know where you guys are so I know what areas want to come see me. So do that. I can't wait to get to more cities. I'm having so much fucking fun on the road. You guys have been amazing. People have been buying merch. These audiences have been out of control good, just electric, laughing, having a blast. And I know all these upcoming shows are going to be no exception. So I will see you there. JMScomedy.com/shows to get your tickets. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. We're going to have a fucking good time either way. So thanks for listening to this little promo. Enjoy this episode. Ta-ta, idiots.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
What kind of ignorant shit is that?
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
You idiot, you fool!
Hey, dummy!
This is the Ignorance is Blessed podcast.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Hey idiots, welcome back to Ignorance is Blessed, the podcast that attempts to overcome ignorance, mostly by asking ignorant questions, with me, Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm your host, and I'm a fucking idiot. That's why we're here, because we're all idiots sometimes. We gotta get answers to our idiot questions, and I'm not afraid to ask them. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. Thanks for giving me a shot. Please hit that subscribe button, leave me a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps me, it helps other people find the podcast so they can get answers to their ignorant questions. It's a whole cycle. And thank you so, so, so much to those of you who have already left a rating and a review and who have subscribed. You are keeping me alive. Emotionally, mentally, some of you are supporting me financially on Patreon. If you want to take a further step and support me in that way. Wow, sorry, brain fart. Didn't have my NeuroGum this evening because I'm recording in the evening. By the way, NeuroGum, hot drop right here. GetNeuro.com/JMS. You can get 15% off NeuroGum. It's caffeinated gum with B vitamins and L-theanine, so you get focused energy, and people keep buying it. I'm getting a lot of people sending me messages telling me they're loving it. It is immensely helpful for focus. So check that out. It's keeping me on track. I would have had some tonight, but I should probably go to bed at some point. But anyway, yes, patreon.com/ignoranceisblessed if you want to financially support the podcast. Shout out, by the way, to my new patrons, Alana and John. That's right. We got another John in the house. What? Thank you so much for joining. I'm excited to have you. You want to hear more than the free hour of every episode? Do you want bonus episodes that you can only hear on Patreon? More important than that, do you want to see clips of my stand-up comedy? Because I've pulled them from pretty much everywhere on my social media, on my YouTube, and you can only see clips of my stand-up on Patreon. I drop a clip every Friday. It is an endless surplus for now. I don't know. Maybe if stand-up doesn't come back, it will come to a screeching halt eventually. But there are plenty of clips to come, and you can only see them on Patreon. So for as little as $1 a month, $1 a month gets you the full-length episodes and the stand-up, and there are levels that go up from there. You want to get postcards from me? $10 a month. You want to come to Crappy Hours twice a month? That's $25 a month. But right now, because we're in COVID, I have lowered that bar temporarily to $10 a month, so get in there now and come hang out. We literally just sit around and chat, and it's a fucking cool time. It's like a little happy hour where I catch up with you guys. We have a good time and more to come, and there are levels... not levels, but goals I have on the Patreon that if I reach, we up the amount of content for everybody and for the people who are paying for Patreon bonus content. So head over to patreon.com/2. Oh my God, I almost said Two Filthy Nerds. That's my other Patreon, because that's my other podcast, which you should also check out if you're into nerd culture or pop culture in general, because right now I'm pulling apart fucking Bachelorette, which is not nerdy at all. To be honest, we are stalling and putting in some crazy content to fill in while my co-host is out of town. So anyway, patreon.com/ignoranceisblessed, all one word, no hashtag in the website. And I would appreciate having you. You can be a top tier level patron and get some fun merch and just be my fucking literal friend forever, because you're the best. Like Jean and Kathy, that's what I'm doing. I'm naming those people. Genuinely have become friends, by the way, with pretty much everyone on my Patreon. That's active. There's a couple silent, subscribers that I don't know that well, but I still appreciate them just as much. But it's been cool. I'm making friends all over the world and getting support from them. So thank you. Enough about me. Before we get to the guest, really quick, want to drop a hot little tip for you guys. Get a Squatty Potty. SquattyPotty.com. Use the code Filthy20 to get 20% off. It's a temporary code. It won't last forever. I cannot tell you how much better I'm shitting now that I have my own Squatty Potty. I had been sneaking into my roommate Nicole's room to use hers, but I can't always do that because she's like here. And I finally got one. Oh, I use this 20% off code and oh shit, literally. And my boyfriend came out of the bathroom the other day and he's like, wow, this has changed the game. And look, this is TMI, but my boyfriend spends too much fucking time on the toilet, and now it's cutting his time in more than half. I still think there's something wrong with him, to be honest, but Squatty Potty is doing a lot of heavy lifting on his heavy droppings. Oh, and I have full-length shows coming up in November. Thanksgiving weekend, I'm coming back to Alaska. Holy shit. I made a joke about running for mayor, and then boom, get a call from a venue like, hey, actually, we're doing half capacity shows and we would love to have you back. So what the fuck? I'm spending Thanksgiving in Alaska. So Anchorage, stay tuned. Check out my social media at JMS Comedy to see exact times, locations. Those are TBA, but I am fucking excited and terrified that I'm going to be so rusty. So now I will be doing all my window spots and every spot I can get my hand on. Just try to freshen up for my fucking... I can't bomb in my hometown. How fucking embarrassing would that be? I'm finally back on stage for an hour and I just eat shit in front of everyone I know. It won't happen. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I might fucking get crazy and do some crowd work. And honestly, I don't know. Just come out. Get a babysitter for your kids. It's Thanksgiving, so family's in town. Just fucking come party. All right. Enough about me. This episode is a fun one. We got a funsie. I am talking to the hilarious Tess Barker. You may know her from the Lady to Lady podcast. She's an incredible writer, amazing comedian, and she made a musical. And if you know me and you're close to me, aka in the Patreon, or just one of my friends, I have been making a musical. So I'm a musical nerd. This is shit I've always loved, but especially as someone who has been in the beginning stages of making a musical in the past year, this was a cool conversation for me. And she's just awesome. So it's a cool insight on creating a musical and how that works and what goes into it. And I think you're going to love her. Ooh, I should have had the neuro gum. That yawn is not a reflection of the upcoming conversation you're about to listen to. So hopefully it didn't make you yawn. If it did, chug some coffee and enjoy this episode with Tess Barker. Hey, idiots. Welcome back to Ignorance is Blessed. I am here with my friend Tess Barker. You know her from Lady to Lady or Britney's Graham podcast. Oh, my God. Or just wherever. I feel like you've written fucking a million things. You've done a million things. I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited because so many of my episodes have been a little bit heavier lately, which I love. Like, I'm like, let's talk about your mental health. What happened to you? But I love having something that, first of all, is a topic I'm excited about, but just that's a little more lighthearted, which is what we're going to talk about. Musicals, Everyone. I'm so excited. So I just want to dig in to what your experience, because for background, everyone, I've been doing this on a few episodes, but I literally did. I'm so bad at booking my podcast that I was like, I'm just going to tweet and hopefully people, because it's such an open forum of like, I just need a topic, but what do my friends like that I don't know they like? And when you reached out to me and you were like, musicals and marathons, by the way, which I feel like is a whole nother episode I would love to have you back for. But when did your love for musicals start?
So I think I don't even ever remember like getting turned on to musicals. I think they were just always in my life because I got it from my parents originally. We always, my mom, I think, was in Guys and Dolls in high school, and I'm not this old that like records were the main way that people listened to music when I was a kid, but we did have a record player.
That's so funny. You're like, it was more of like a hipster parent type thing than a necessity.
I just want to clarify that. I was raised by the original hipsters. They were just always playing in my house, you know, like before there was YouTube or anything, you were just kind of subject to the whims of whatever your parents had around. So
oh, yeah, it's, I would not like the Eagles if it wasn't for my mom's alcoholism. 100%.
Exactly. I'm in the same way with Creedence. They're always playing in our house. And then I'm from the suburbs of LA. So that was also always like a very like special thing that we would do is go into the city and like put on a nice dress and I would paint my nails and we would go see plays at like the Amundsen.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah, so I think that's what really got me into it early on too, is that's sort of my first recollection of doing something like fancy and special, is like going into LA and seeing a play.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that I didn't realize you were from LA. That's, or LA suburbs. That's amazing.
I claim it, yeah.
Good for you. I mean, yeah, no, I was in, I lived in Southern Mississippi when I saw my first musical, and it was like Biloxi Community Theater, which was great to me, but I'm sure a far cry from the selection and availability of plays as someone who grew up adjacent to, you know, the city where everyone comes to perform.
Oh, it was great. What musical did you see in Biloxi?
West Side Story.
Oh, perfect. Great.
which they were, I know, it's like Southern Mississippi. They're like, perfect, a musical sort of about racism. Let's do it. But yeah, and it was, that was the moment. I must have been like maybe 9 or 10 when I was like, oh my God, musicals. I've always loved them, but I'm sort of cultureless about them. Like I've seen an embarrassingly small amount, and it's all the very, what I think musical lovers would consider almost hacky musicals, where I'm like, Grease. Like, but which, I mean, is an amazing musical.
It's a beautiful musical. And it's like kind of a perfect show, honestly. Like it's very well structured. It's bop after bop. I mean, I think that's one thing that I love about musicals, especially coming from the comedy world where we're all so cynical and like too cool for school.
Is, I
like,
know.
If there's anything musicals are not, it's too cool for school. Like, you know, people still get horny for the new West Side adaptation. They, you know.
I love it. I love that it's just like, yeah, that. Like it can be cheesy and you're like, that's why it's so great.
Exactly.
Or just very campy. Absolutely. So did you start like from a young age, like participating in musicals?
Yes. So not only did we listen to musicals and go to see shows a lot, but I really liked acting when I was a kid. I did have like an agent and do the whole like,
of course. I mean, honestly, you know. To me, it's like the idea that anyone were to live in the like LA adjacent, if their kid were to express that, I would never want to like force my kid like be a star. But if your kid's like, I want to act and you're right here, why would you not let them go for it? Like, sure.
That's how my parents were. But looking back as someone who now knows what a pain in the ass it is to be an actor, I'm like, yeah. Wow, that was really nice of my parents to cart my ass down to the city to like go try to get a Barbie commercial a couple times a week.
God, I know that they're like, because that's how I would be as a parent. Like, here we go, another fucking audition.
Yeah, it was like, the opposite of a stage mom. It was like, oh, God damn it. You got a call back? All right.
I know. You're like, are you sure this is what you want to do? All right.
Fine. Literally. Yeah. So I tried to, like, you know, I auditioned for a lot of film and TV stuff, but then theater was like much more realistic and much more like accessible. So yeah, yes. I got into community theater and community musicals and stuff at a very young age. And that was, you know, I wouldn't really say that I was a theater nerd because I also like was cool and partied and stuff, but my whole childhood and teenage years, I was always in a musical of some kind.
That's amazing. Do you remember what the first one you were in was?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, probably Oliver. I did several Olivers. I think I was, you know, when you're a kid, you just keep playing orphans. That's really that's like all, your
you're
bread
like
and
Annie
butter.
Oliver, this is all we've got for you. Beg for your life.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all. Yeah.
I love that. Like, yeah, that is the only way any playwright knew how to write children is that like, they're an orphan and we'll start with that.
People love kids with dead parents.
It's true. The Olsen twins never had a mother in any of their movies. And I don't know. It's always like, and their mom's just mysteriously dead and Billboard dad or whatever. But
someone should look into that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's the only way anyone knows how to write like childhood strife, I guess, is like, which, I mean, rightfully so. It's probably, it's a very stressful thing for a kid to not have a parent.
It's a very stressful thing for a kid to not have a parent, and it's very fun as a kid to play an orphan. I mean, like, you get to have like smudgy dirt on your face. You get to have like kind of that tattered costume. I mean, it's very glamorous to be an orphan when you're a kid.
It's so funny, yeah, that as a child to be like cosplaying as poor and you're like, this is awesome.
Yes.
You're like, yeah, in a play. But if this was your life, you might, if there was a real Miss Hannigan, you wouldn't be like, look at my cartwheel.
Exactly. Speaking of Miss Hannigan, that was like my first big part. I played Miss Hannigan.
You played Miss Hannigan?
Yeah.
Oh my God, when? Yeah. Where?
Yeah. And that's probably in sixth grade. In sixth grade at my school, I played Miss Hannigan. And I think that's honestly, that is what really got me into comedy. Like that, I mean, I'm not even gonna be humble. I fucking crushed it.
Of course you did. What a dream role. No, that is always like, I think of Annie and I'm like, I would love to play Miss Hannigan. I would love to just go to like a small community theater and be like, I've stopped working to go be Miss Hannigan in Idaho or something. But also then I'm like, even if you take out whatever lack of talent I have, I just feel like typecasting already height, I'm going to be counted out. They're going to be like, Miss Hannigan can't be the same size as the orphans. It doesn't matter.
You just need to get some really high Miss Hannigan heels.
Oh my God.
That would really help. Because a lot of it's with, like, how she walks. It's a very, like, physical role. I mean, and it's so fun to play a drunk person.
I mean, truly, that, I'm not into acting in general so much. Like, once I kind of got into stand-up and I've, you know, I go on auditions and stuff, but I just don't really feel a passionate drive to be a working actor. I'm always like, it was a part I liked. Like, that's just gonna, they're going, Hollywood will hand me a part I like. But to get to play even like a side character on like a sitcom who's chronically drunk, like, what a dream.
Oh, truly.
To be a fucking disaster. Ah, that's amazing. Was that one of your favorite roles you've played?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, that's something, I remember that being like very formative for me. And like, I got a lot of accolades for it. You know, like, I would walk through the hallways and everyone would like say like, we love you, Miss Hannigan. And like, so, but then in high school, I played Ursula in Bye Bye Birdie. That was really fun.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Cause you know, again, like very, I think I just realized, I mean, it was just me realizing that I was, again, a comedian and not an actor. Cause I just liked anything where I could be like really spazzy and get a lot of attention and not actually like show any kind of real acting chops.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want to show my range. I want to be an asshole on stage.
Exactly.
And I want to slip and fall and have the audience lose their mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Shit. That's amazing. Did you ever get into the like professional or professional adjacent with theater acting?
Not myself personally. I mean, I realized pretty early on that I was probably a better writer than I am an actor. I mean, I love musicals. And, so, I mean, we can get into this, but I ended up writing a musical.
Yeah. That's what I was like, I want to get into it. I know I was going to bring it up either way, but I'm like, oh, how will this segue?
This actually segues well. So yeah, when I went to school, the first place I went to college was Emerson College in Boston.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then I had a lot of friends that went to a school called Boston Conservatory, which is like a very prestigious musical theater school. So I had a lot of friends who were like serious actors who are still on Broadway and were like very, very, very talented.
Amazing.
I was getting drunk with a lot of those people. I myself was not taking those classes. but in Boston, I met my friend Brett, who was at Boston Conservatory and just a genius piano player, genius composer. And I met him through another friend of mine who he was her roommate. So that was when we were in college, and then cut to like 10 years later, he moved to New York. I mean, he just kind of right out of college became like a very successful music director. It was like directing stuff on Broadway.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So then like 10 years later, I was in New York. So I was like, let's meet up for a drink. And while we were drinking, we got this idea for a musical. And I was like, I'm serious. I really want to write this musical with you. So then like 6 months later, our mutual friend who we had met through got married, and at her reception we were like, seriously, let's write that musical idea that we had.
Amazing.
So the next day we meet up for a hike at Runyon Canyon, and we start like talking out, we're like hungover from the wedding, and we're like talking out.
I love a hungover idea generation,
right?
We're just like, maybe something will be such a spark that I'll stop having a headache.
Exactly. You almost like don't have enough room in your brain for like any other thoughts except the one
that
you're
and it's like you're too just like, you feel too shitty to be self-conscious about throwing out ideas too, where you're just like, I don't know, totally. What about this? Where it's like, I feel like for me, that can be a big block where it's like, oh, is this going to sound stupid? Are you going to reject this? Where it's like, oh, the full writer's room, like, let me throw this out. If it's shitty, whatever, we can move on. I don't need to.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, so we're walking and talking, and we come up with, we're literally hiking on Running Canyon, and we ended up coming up on that hike with what really was, it did end up being like the whole story of our whole show.
Oh my God.
So we get this idea for a musical, and we finish the hike, and we're so excited about this idea that he's like, I think we should write the first song right now. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, do you have a keyboard? And my boyfriend at the time had actually just bought a keyboard. And I was like, I do. I'm like, just come over and let's just fuck around. So we go over to my house, and he starts fucking around on the keyboard. I start fucking around with lyrics. I mean, it was like out of a movie. Like, we just immediately like clicked and had this crazy synergy. And so we just like went into this crazy creative zone, and it was like, he was supposed to go back to New York the next day, and we'd been working for like 3 hours, and he called and delayed his flight. He's like, I have to stay here until we finish this song.
Oh my God. Amazing.
So it ended up being like 20 hours in my apartment. We like ordered Domino's, like our hair started getting frizzy.
Oh my God. Creative mania. I'm obsessed with it. When you get in one of those zones, you're like, we can't stop.
That's us to a T. Like, we're, yeah, we have, like, more than anyone else I've ever collaborated with, we have this insane creative mania. So we write this duet that is still the last duet in our musical. And I mean, both of us knew, I mean, it's a really fucking good song. Like, it's really good.
Such a good feeling. It's like when you're like, this is a bop. Like, this is,
yeah.
Like, I am writing a musical with Jeffrey Baldinger, and we've been working at, like, we've sort of gone completely stagnant.
Oh, amazing, though.
Yeah, we did, like, a reading of it at the end of December, and it was, like, very well received, just the reading. So we're like, by the end of next year, of course, 2020 has fucked us over, but we're like, let's get a staged rehearsal. Like, let's make that our goal. Because we've never, neither of us have done anything in this field. We just both like music.
Yes.
There has been, you know, there were a couple songs where it's like, okay, I'm not crazy. We just wrote a fucking great, fun song.
This is so cool. Like,
this is going to be the song when someone goes, have you seen this musical, that their friends start singing, you know?
Yes,
that they're like,
exactly.
Oh my God. Oh,
exactly. Yeah. So that's amazing. You're writing a musical. I love it. So we finished the song. And the next day, he had already written a couple musicals that had been, like, produced in big theaters on the East
Hell
Coast.
Yeah.
So he was going to Hawaii to visit an investor from what, this is like a fairy tale, I swear to God. So
I mean, yeah, no, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
I still can't believe I got to do this. So he was going to Hawaii to visit this investor, and he goes to Hawaii. And he goes, I just got back from California. I think I have a new writing partner. We just wrote this duet. I want to play it for you on the piano. He plays it for this investor guy. The investor guy just starts sobbing.
Oh my God. That's amazing, but also, my God.
Exactly. But also so musical investor, right?
Yes, of course. And it's like, that is the kind of person that, of course he's a musical investor.
Exactly.
That song made him start crying.
And yes. he's like, you guys need to write this whole play. I have a mansion in South Carolina, and I want to offer it up for you guys, for you to use.
This is amazing.
Yeah. He's like, I want to offer it up for you guys to use it as, like, a residency, and I want you guys to just go stay there and write the show at my mansion in South Carolina.
And you're like, I guess.
All right.
So, I don't know how I feel about mansions.
I guess we could make that happen.
I don't know if I can be creative if I'm not suffering in my overheated apartment.
Yeah, if I'm not in front of my, like, 1970s AC window unit. I don't
just
know if juices will be
you.
Flowing. So, yeah, we, of course, take him up on the offer. And so we wrote that song, I think, in, like, July, and he wanted to give us the house for August. So it was pretty quick. It was, like, 3 weeks later, we decided to go into total isolation. We moved into this mansion for an entire month.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it was, like, in this tiny town in South Carolina where there was literally only, like, a stoplight and nothing else open. So it was, like, we literally had no other stimulus. Like, it was, like, our treat, if we, like, finished a song, would be, like, okay, we're going to go to Walmart and get some groceries. Like, that's the only place we ever went.
That's the only thing to do. Wow.
Yeah.
How was that? Because I've often thought, like, even with writing comedy stuff or, like, pilots, I've never done it, but I've always been, like, if I could just get away or lock myself in a place for, like, just cancel everything, give myself this amount of time.
It was life-changing. I mean, that's still because of this experience. Like, now when I have something big to write, I do that.
That's,
like, it changed my life. Like, it was, again, like, I can't believe I got to do this. It was, like, this gorgeous mansion, like, this turn-of-the-century mansion. His music room that we wrote in just had mahogany walls everywhere and just priceless art hanging everywhere. And
amazing.
A Steinway piano, which Brett wrote on. Yeah.
He's like, I bought a mansion for other people to write musicals in. Now,
pretty much.
This exists. I just send people there to create magic.
Yes. And so we didn't have internet. We didn't have TV. We kept our cell phones in our room. We had nothing distracting us.
Amazing.
So, and the mansion, both of our rooms, like, we both had these, like, majestic suites. Like, we had these huge master, we each had our own, like, huge master bedroom. And each room came with this really nice, comfy white robe.
Oh, my God.
And so it was like a dream. And so we get to this place. We change into our white robes. We obviously, like, stock up on wine. And we just went into, like, a state of, like you said, just, like, manic collaboration. And we, because we had nothing else going on, we would work for, like, these 18-hour stretches. We would finish work at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning. And then we would like drink wine and sit on rocking chairs outside and like kind of talk about what we just did for a few hours.
Amazing.
And we'd sleep for like whatever 5 hours, wake up and keep working. And we did that for a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you get, so, you got it like all done, like all squared away?
That trip, I think we got like 70% of it done.
And okay.
We ended up coming back to the house that Thanksgiving, and that's when we finished the show. So we wrote the whole show in that house.
Wow.
Yeah, in isolation. And it was like one of the coolest experiences of my life. I mean, truly just one of the coolest experiences of my life. So yeah, after that, then we took it to New York. We did it as like a stage reading there.
Amazing.
Invited a bunch of people. And then from that, we got into something called the New York Musical Festival, which is like, you put your show up off Broadway.
Yeah. That's amazing. Congrats. Yeah. That's so cool.
Thanks. So yeah, it ran in New York for 3 weeks. And then from there, we got a bunch of like regional productions. And it's since been done kind of like throughout the South and at a bunch of colleges. And
stuff. Oh, that's amazing. So with that process, like you, when you like do a festival, is that kind of also showcasing it for regional?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So then do people like pay you guys to like do the play? How did, or so cool.
Yeah. So now we just get, you know, royalties from it. And I mean, I always say like plays are very cool intellectual property to have because to me, they're like the vacation rental of intellectual property because once you write them, they're just kind of like a passive income.
Thing. Yeah. People just go, oh, we want to do this at our theater.
Yeah.
We'll buy the stuff from you or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so fucking rad. Okay. You have to tell me about the play.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
So what is it called?
It's called Time Between Us. And it's a 2-person show. And I think that's another thing that we're really proud of. We wrote it intentionally to be something that would be really easy to produce. So
that's great. Cause I'm thinking of like the show that I'm writing, I'm very excited about, but there's definitely moments where I'm like, we're getting pretty carried away for people who have no really like foot in the door with the musical community or like that. I'm like, all right. And then we're in hell and we're going to have pyrotechnics. It's like, or just like a red backdrop. And this person will also be playing this person, but like, we can also picture it really big.
Yeah. I mean, that just gives you flexibility. Like if you have the money, do the pyrotechnics.
Yeah. But that's also so smart to write a show that would be easy for other people to put up. Cause that's going to be, you know, people are going to have limited resources, limited budget, limited people. So they're going to be like, okay, what is within our means at this small theater in the middle of nowhere or whatever.
Exactly. And that was, I have to credit Brett with that idea. Cause I was coming into this like a fan of musicals, but I was not at all in the professional musical world.
Yeah. But you're like 42nd Street, 800 people on stage,
a tap dancing roller skater, you know, like.
That's how I would be. And he was like, let's rein it in a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, it's 2 people. It's also the orchestra is really small. It's just piano, cello.
Great.
But it's, I mean, again, this is not me. His music is just like gorgeous. Like I love the cello and I love the piano and like, it's just a beautiful score. So anyway, it's about, we kind of describe it as like Will and Grace meets the last 5 years. So it's about like a gay guy and a straight girl. And it starts out with them like right out of art school, kind of like what they think they're going to do with their lives.
Amazing.
And he's a photographer. So it's like snapshots of their life over 30 years. So you see them age over 30 years. And like one of them goes, you know, kind of has a lot of professional success, but their personal life is shit. And the other one has a lot of personal success, but their professional life is shit.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm going to turn into that music investor. I haven't even heard the songs. I'm like, oh my God, it sounds beautiful.
People cry at the end of it. I mean, that's the other weird thing is like coming from comedy, it's such a weird experience because it's also like, you know, when you're doing stand-up, you're not observing yourself doing stand-up.
Yeah, you're just like so present in where you are.
Exactly. And so
yeah,
you don't have time to get in your head about it, right? Like you're just worried about your next joke. Whereas like, it's a very out of control feeling to be in the audience of a show that you wrote because it's like,
my baby.
It's your baby and you're super like aware of how the audience is feeling and none of it is in your control.
Oh my God. Yeah, I guess it's like the closest it could come to stand up is like if you wrote someone else's material and you were watching them perform it.
Yes.
Oh, or like watching someone perform, God, your material. Can you imagine like, if someone wanted to buy like some, you know, a hugely famous comedian was like, can I buy that bit from you? And then watching them bomb at a theater 100%. With your bit or something, you're like, oh no.
100%. And also, like, you know, like, anything that you write, I think most people, there's always going to be something that bugs you or like, oh, I could have done that better or whatever. So like, at a certain point, obviously you just have to say that is what it is. But those moments when you're watching them are like so cringeworthy.
Yeah. Like I'm sure, especially with a play where you could easily just go, I mean, I'm sure it happens, you know, with film and television as well, where you just go like, that's the line I went with. That is, because it's, you know, once you come out of it and you're a few steps back, you're almost, you're as close as to a pure observer as you ever can be with your own stuff. You're always going to be tied to it. But yeah, it is interesting having to watch someone sing your song. Oh, that's so crazy.
It's crazy. But it's also like very, very cool because I was so fortunate. I mean, we had like legit Broadway actors acting in it in the New York production. And so to see someone that talented, like, do something that I wrote.
That's amazing.
One of the coolest experiences of my life. Like, it was just, I mean, that really, I mean, because I know we all like to make fun of actors, and rightfully so, but.
Of course. Rightfully so.
But what they do, like, when they're good at what they do, it's like, okay, you really are bringing something to this text that I didn't even put in there. Like,
absolutely.
Bravo.
It's like, I think we all know when we're making fun of actors, it's more the shitty ones, but.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, because it's so easy to go like, oh, you're an actor, you're playing pretend, and then you watch someone fucking nail a role, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Me and Brad always say, like, that's our moment, like, good night, New York. Like, when an actress just, like, tears shit up, it's just like, fucking good night, New York. Like, you just fucking.
Especially in a musical. Like, how magical and how amazing that you got to write it, but then also, like, to perform in any capacity, I feel like as someone who loves musicals, you just like at all to go, oh my God, my musical's in New York at all is like,
yes.
Whoa, what a like dream that most people are like, but I would never really do that.
Yes.
And then you're in this festival with like these amazing actors and it gets picked up and regional. That's fucking incredible. Congrats. How many years ago was it that you wrote this?
We wrote it 10 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Have you done any musical writing since? Have you ever thought about doing it again?
No, I just recently talked to Brett. We're like, should we? Because it also was like, I mean, it's amazing having it now, but like, it was like actual childbirth writing it, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, where it's like, it's painful. And there's, I don't know how it was for you guys, but we went through so many iterations. We've gone through, we're not even done. But like, of changing up, hitting things that you're like, actually it would make more sense if the story went this way, but you've already done so much that you're like, I know we need to make this adjustment in this song or in this part, but it's like,
no, 100%. 100%. And it's not like writing a screenplay where it's like, okay, that doesn't work, I need to rewrite that scene. It's like, oh no, that if you had to rewrite part of a song, that whole song might be a wash, or like,
yeah, that you're maybe- like, I can no longer use this song. And then you're like, I mean, we literally had one song that we like realized couldn't work, but then there were a couple times where I was like, maybe we can shoehorn in that song. Like, I'm trying to like force it. And I was like,
oh yes. Oh yes.
When you guys were writing songs, did you have a method, or was it song by song as far as like melody first or lyrics first or?
Yeah. So I like Brett to write a little ahead of me. So like what we would do is kind of talk about kind of like what the song-ish needed to be, obviously from like a story point of view.
Yeah.
And maybe in that discussion, we would have a little bit of idea of like lyrically where it was going to go. And so I would start to make like a word bank of lyrics that I thought I might want to use.
Yeah.
And then I liked him to write like two or three bars, and then that would get, I like to have the like, okay, blah, 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 blah. And then I can like fill in the words with it.
Fill in the words.
Yeah. 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 Like, I don't know how people write lyrics first. Like for me, I really like to have, the music to go on top of.
Yeah, it was the same for us because Jeffrey, I'm saying this like, we've done nothing. We've done a stage reading at the improv lab.
That's huge.
No, but like, yeah, he sort of will come up with an idea and he is pretty good on piano and he just sort of runs away and comes up with stuff. And his mom is a children's musician and he's been like a very musical adjacent in musical like person as well. So it's not like we're both clueless morons like, I guess we'll make one of those music shows, but right. Yeah, he definitely comes in with a couple bars of, oh, maybe something that sounds like this, and there is a lot of like riffing and finding rhymes or whatever, where I'm like, oh, I feel like that's where I better contribute, is adding to what already exists.
You know? Yeah. And it's also like, I'm sure, I don't know if you found this, but it's like the amount of lyrics you can actually fit in a song is really so small. Like I would always have so many ideas for like all these lyrics I wanted to do. And then it's actually like, you need to reduce it.
Yes.
So much that I think that's what is really tricky about writing lyrics, is taking an idea and getting it down so simple, which I think similar to comedy.
Absolutely. But it's like magic when someone can, I mean, that's, I think, why so many people with musicals, but also just songs in general, when a song really pulls at your heartstrings, because it's like when someone's able to capture this complex feeling in like 16 words or something, you're like, I don't, or just a sentence, you're like, how did you sum up my entire broken heart with
exactly.
Yeah, I had the same thing, almost to the point where there's moments where I try to like, if we just say the words really fast, like I'll be like, and it's like, no, that's you're literally, it's like trying to cram a dick into a place it can't fit. And just,
it's
like, yeah, come on.
Cram a dick in your ear, pretty much.
Yeah. That it's like, no, we can make it work. Did you ever do a version where you played a part? Or was it always just written?
It was always just written. Brett played the piano in the New York production. But I don't, I mean, like the songs in my musical are very challenging to sing. Like I don't have anywhere near the vocal chops to play the part.
How fun to actually get someone to hit them. Cause it's one thing when you're writing it, I feel like to have the idea of what you're going for and you're like, I can hit the note kind of like you understand what it's supposed to sound like, but then to hear someone who is just vocally trained and can hit those like crazy, just, I don't know, notes and different things like that. That must be.
Oh, totally. I mean, that was super cool. Cause yeah, obviously like when we were writing it, I mean, Brett's a music director, so he has like perfect pitch and he would always like sing it for the demo. But yeah, the first time we heard it with like with two professional actors doing it, it was like seeing it in color for the first time. It was
really?
Just like, oh shit.
Wow. Did you cry?
Yeah. I've cried so many times. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I cry when the wind blows, but like,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And what really made me cry, honestly, was the first time I heard it with cello. Because that's when I really like just got so horny for cello. Like it is such a like heartbreakingly beautiful instrument that we had all written on the piano, and then Brett did all the orchestrations and everything. So I couldn't really hear how it was gonna sound until I heard, you know, until I actually, there was a cellist there. And the first time I heard it with that, it just added this dimension to it that was just like, oh
whoa.
My god.
I mean, I can't even imagine what that must feel like to just hear your own songs taken to this like next emotional level.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Go ahead.
Oh, and then let's see, I have written plays. I have a play that that like is licensed for like high school and colleges, that's not a musical, that I wrote by myself. So.
Not to brag, that's fucking amazing. What's it called?
That's called Showdown at Palm Tree Pines, and it takes place at a retirement community, because when I was in high school I always like playing old people, so I was like, I'm just gonna write a play that's all old people.
Yes, that's my favorite. I played a grandma in like my senior year. There was like a spring play that was extremely dramatic, but
what
I was
it, do you remember?
Oh, it was The Effect of Gamma Rays on Man on the Moon Marigolds. Oh,
okay.
It's very obscure. They're like one of the, every year some senior in drama gets to pick and direct a spring play. So we do like one big musical and then there's this like smaller play. And it's about this, like, I think it was like about a schizophrenic mother who was losing her mind. And there was this part with a grandma. I had no speaking parts. It literally was just like, I didn't take the audition seriously, not that I would have gotten anything, but I'm pretty sure not only did I do a comedic monologue, I literally did the Chris Farley, Matt Foley, You're Living in a Van Down by the Way.
I
was like, I don't know what this play's about. I'm going to do this as a monologue. And then they made us all walk like an old person. They're like, now everyone just go across the stage. And so my friend's like, I'm making you the grandma. I'm like, good. The part that doesn't speak, I deserve that in a drama where I came with an SNL sketch as my monologue. That's fair. But yeah, just, I mean, it was so such jackassery because it's a super serious play and there's just one scene where I just walk out. But because it was like a small school and I was like friends with everybody and our costume budget was nothing. So what should have been a little old lady wig looked like this fucking
like Albert Einstein crazy hair. And so I walked out and people just started, like the crowd went crazy laughing, and it was not supposed to be this funny moment. It was just like,
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Oh no, they're all laughing because I look like a fucking crazy person.
I'm sure you love that though.
Oh no, yeah, no, my thing was like, I was trying not to crack up because I was like, oh, I've just ruined, there's like a woman, my friend is playing this character having a breakdown screaming at her daughter and out comes grandma and like people are just laughing, and I was like, well, what do you, it's high school. But I love that you did old people. I mean, because I just think of like Golden Girls and like any type
exactly.
of. Exactly. That's amazing. And how long did it take you to write that? I assume that was not in a South Carolina mansion.
So. No, I wrote that at home in Los Angeles. Yeah. that didn't take me as long at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I wrote that in like a few weeks. Yeah. And then I went back and forth with like the licensing company and did like a few rewrites for them. But yeah, it wasn't nearly as laborious. Yeah. Yeah. Time between us, I mean, by the time it got, I mean, because we did, I think we did 3 stage readings in New York before.
Okay.
So it was a pretty long, I think we were writing for like a year and a half or 2
Okay,
years.
I was going to ask how long before you like got it on its feet.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Would you, I mean, I know like you said you talked with your friend and you're like, yeah, but like, would you ever write another musical?
I think I would, especially like, it's funny because especially recently, I don't know about you, but I find musicals are something like in stressful times, like right after Trump got elected, all I could listen to is musicals.
Yeah, that it's, I need things that like check me out that I can almost like childhood comforts of, I don't have to think about the world. And I think a musical does, or even, I mean, there are like more serious musicals that at least like can add music to a situation, but
oh yeah, and even sad musicals make me happy. I mean, Les Miserables makes me super happy. I love in Rent when they talk about AIDS, you know what I mean, like
like they're all dying, oh thank god I
turned, oh good off. Yeah. So yeah, I've really been like, especially like since the pandemic, like I've been in this like huge Sondheim kick, and so it's got me like kind of like in the mood to
like in the mood to, yeah, I started watching a few and I'm like, oh, I should, we should probably like pick back up and at least work on the one I have started.
Yes.
How
What's
do you
yours about?
Oh my God. It's, I need to have a better elevator pitch for it, but it's extremely dark, but it's about 2 kids whose parents die on Christmas and they go to hell, but they find out Satan is actually their father and he's also Santa Claus. And they're trying to get back to, they have to like try to recover their souls within 24 hours and they can get out of hell. It's, but it opens on, I mean, for sure, if it ever has any type of fandom, it's gonna be a cult following. I mean, it opens on, I shouldn't laugh at this, it opens on like violent domestic abuse with a song, but the song's very like do 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 do, like it's, I it's like something that's probably cancelable in the eyes of some, but it's very like South Park-y dark humor.
I love it.
So yeah, it's the, but then it focuses on these 2 children going through hell and they go to purgatory where their mom is. Cause it's like the dad is, it all stems from their dad being this gambler who owes like money to the mob and he murders his family over like $200. Like it's an absurdly small amount of money that he just like gets his family killed over. And then, because he like sells his soul to the devil. It's a whole thing.
Sorry.
Is that your dog?
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
What's your dog's name?
What, 2? Buddy and Garth. Quiet.
Buddy and Garth.
They're trying to protect me from the mailman right now. We need the mail. We need the post office, guys. Quiet.
Save the mailman. And I was like, do you understand the implications of your behaviors, dogs? We need to support our postal workers. It's totally, it's fine.
Sorry.
If you want to go grab them or whatever, you can. But My listeners are used to being accosted by the animals here. That it's, they've just become an ongoing. Like at this, I mean, it's pure laziness on my part, probably. I've stopped even cutting it out.
Okay, cool. Oh, hi. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. It was just my wine delivery. Don't worry, guys. Okay.
I mean, that's an essential worker.
Exactly. Like, that's
the fuel behind all of these podcasts is that it's like, this needs to happen. Oh, what was I going to ask? Oh, how do you feel about film adaptations of musicals?
I mean, I think it depends, but for the most part, I'm super excited about them.
I mean, yeah, because it makes them more accessible.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, I think Chicago was such a fun movie.
It was so great.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm trying to think. Some of them are like a huge flop. I thought the Rent movie kind of sucked.
Yeah. It's like some of them can't do justice to how good the musical is live. I think that's just, but Chicago is like, I saw the movie before I saw the musical in theater. And then I was like, I actually liked the movie better.
And I thought in Chicago, they did a really good job of like maintaining the spirit of the stage play, but like adapting it adequately for a movie. Like you got to go into her psyche and, you know, they really used the medium while still like, it was still Chicago.
Yes. Where it's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what I've seen recently that.
Sorry, my chihuahua. You're sitting on my lap. Come here.
So funny.
Did you see Jersey Boys?
I did not. Oh my God.
I thought that was a really good Garth.
So cute. No. that was a good adaptation.
I thought so. Yeah. I thought it was fun. And I mean, like, that's a jukebox musical, right? Which is kind of controversial, but like, I'm so not like conceited about that shit. Yeah, exactly. Like,
no, why not have a story around songs you already love to sing and like that you, it's, I don't know. I think I'm with you on that. You know what I liked that I didn't think I would? Did you watch Hamilton on Disney Plus?
Yes. I'm a huge Hamilton nerd. I fucking loved it.
I hadn't seen it. I know everyone's like talked about it, but I had never seen it. And I was like, oh, thank God. But I've seen a few on stage productions of musicals where it's like filmed in the theater instead of adapted for a movie. And I was kind of like, oh, this might be pretty rough. But I was like, oh, they kind of nailed it, I thought.
They did a great job. I mean, I felt like I was like in the theater watching it, which I think is like ideal. Yeah, I thought that was really, really well filmed. And like, how was it? Were you familiar with the soundtrack prior to
honestly, no. So I was like, and I, because everyone was so into it, and I had roommates that would listen to it, but I was on the fence about like, maybe I should just get to know the soundtrack because it obviously is a great soundtrack. Everyone loves it. But then I was like, I kind of want to have the initial experience of hearing it for the first time, which there's pros and cons, especially with that, because there's so much packed into all the songs.
Exactly.
That it might have been better to kind of get a like, oh, I already know this song and now I get to see it sung. But what I did enjoy was we had the closed captioning on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That
and
helps,
I feel
I'm
like
sure.
There's so much. If I just watched that live for the first time and had never heard the music, like there's so much detail packed into some of those songs you could easily miss. And I was like, oh, this is great because I'm absorbing it in two ways.
I think that's a great tip because a lot of people who told me that they didn't like Hamilton, you know, had no exposure to it previously, saw it live and were like, I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, yeah, because part of the brilliance of the show is like every lyric works on 8 different levels and it's just so smart and so dense. And it's just like,
yes,
it's almost like she's smart for its own good. But yeah, I like the idea of watching it with closed captioning.
Yeah, because it was just like, you know, with all the rapping and like quick lyrics, there's so much I could have missed. And I feel like it still would have been okay, but I feel like really being in tune with everything that was going on, I was like, oh, I am invested in this.
Yes.
And that made me like, why don't people write more history musicals? But it's like, well, yes, someone has to be driven to write them. Like,
yeah, like, maybe Lin-Manuel will read another history book and he'll
right just read one more history book. Give us the. I thought it was funny watching. I don't even remember. I forget the actor's name, even though he's like an incredible Broadway person. The guy who played King George.
Oh, he's so good.
Interesting seeing him in HD, like spitting while he sang, and I'm like, that's. He can't love that. He can't be watching and going. I mean, not that I would never watch myself back on anything because it pains me deeply to like. I'm like, I just want, I don't ever want to see it. It's out there. Ugh.
Totally.
But like, having to watch yourself in this like critically acclaimed film just sort of like, and I was like, maybe it was a character choice.
Yeah, but or maybe it was just really hard to sing in that costume.
Exactly. I was like, oh, that's got to be like, well, that's out there forever now. But it's also like, yeah, you're fine. You're, although I heard that initially those actors were getting fucked on money.
Really?
Like I heard there was like a whole, God, I wish I had the verbiage for it. I talked to someone who was in the Broadway world and has friends who are a part of it that like, they weren't like when the they're supposed to get like a certain percentage as like equity actors.
Yeah.
And Hamilton or like someone at the top wasn't signing off on that. I'm very surprised that this isn't, if this is true, that it's not been like a bigger thing, but
yeah.
Like there's some sort of 1% shares type thing that actors should get. And they were in like negotiations and refusing to do it. So there's been a lot of people who didn't think that Burr's performance was that great in the movie. And from what I heard on the well, that's what I think. I think it was
that's
great.
He's my favorite. I think his voice is like actual butter. Like
I think he nails it, but someone I know who is like knows someone in the production or something was like, oh yeah, he was like refusing to go on if they didn't like make this concession for the entire cast and production crew, that it was like some sort of like, he was like, I'm not performing unless you do this. And so it was like right in this moment of like this tension and being pissed, and then he's like, okay, here we go. But
whoa, drama.
I wish I had the better wording and like could actually deliver the story, because now I'm just remembering that I had that conversation when I could have adequately prepared for this podcast by being like, did you know this? Oh my God. If you were going to be in a musical, any musical, do you have like a dream role that you would love to, if abilities or typecasting even aside, like if there's just a role that you love?
I mean, if I could give myself, let's see, that's such a good question. I mean, the lead in Next to Normal would be a really fun role. Do you know that show?
I don't know that show. Now I have to watch it or find it.
It's really good. I mean, I want to say that's about a show that's about like 10 years old.
And
it's a small cast show about essentially about a couple where the wife is like bipolar and on all these meds. And
oh my God, like, what a fun role to play.
Yeah. And it's kind of like really contingent on how well you act it. It's like one of those things where you just kind of have to act the shit out of it, and has really fun songs.
Oh my God, I love that.
That would be fun. And I'm obsessed with the song Ladies Who Lunch from Company. Company is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes.
So yeah, I would love to sing that. Yeah, probably those two would be the first things that come to mind. Or I don't like the whole show of Wicked, but if I could have the vocal ability to sing Defying Gravity correctly, I feel like,
oh my God.
That's all I would need in life.
That would be incredible. What a dream.
Did you see Wicked?
I've seen like bootlegged YouTube versions. Like, it's so ghetto. No, it was like on my list of, it honestly comes down more to, I'm not good with like self-care and doing things I enjoy. So of course, just this year, I was like, you know what? I don't need to live in such scarcity financially. Like, I'm not killing it, but I'm fine.
Right.
I can treat myself. I'm going to start going to plays. And that was like on my list of like, when that comes back, I'm going to go. And now, you know, there's nothing.
Now we might be talking about a dead art form. So,
I mean,
I don't even want to joke about that. But
I know the music from it too, that it's like, that's one where I got to know the music just from Musical Friends before I even like ventured into watching it. But
I mean,
like,
popular is such
popular,
a fun song.
That's all I'm saying. I'm like, that's the song popular. I want to sing.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
yeah, such a fun, man. What are your, also before, you know, the world took a giant shit and the US shit on it even harder, and now life is closed down, were you going to see musicals regularly still?
Yeah. I try to see pretty much anything that I can get my hands on. We got Barbara Gray and I actually, when Hamilton was in LA, we got season tickets together for the Pantages because it worked out that it was like cheaper to get a season ticket than to get a single ticket to Hamilton.
Oh my God, that makes so much sense, but like is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but it was like amazing because we would have these like theater dates every like 6 weeks and we got to see all these shows that I never would have like gone to see. But
oh my God.
Like the Bodyguard musical was one of the most fun times I've ever had in the theater. Like
really?
It so did not take itself seriously. Like it leaned into the camp so hard.
I love that.
The audience was just having so much fun. By the end, like the Whitney Houston character comes out on a giant platform and it's like so camp. She sings "I Will Always Love You" from this like huge giant pedestal. And like everyone was like just lost our minds. We were like screaming and hollering. People were standing up and clapping. And like,
that's amazing. Fuck. I love that. I was wanting to do, I was like, maybe I'll get a season pass. Oh my God. If it ever comes back, I want to come with you guys.
Please do. We have so much fun. Come with us. Come with us. We get a drink at the Frolic Room. It's like so much fun.
I love that.
Last time I was in New York, I saw the Cher show.
Oh,
which like talk about like a jukebox musical. That show was so fun.
That's
and
amazing.
So well done. And I'm obsessed with Cher too. So it was just like checking so many boxes, but.
Oh, I mean, she's incredible. Who isn't?
Exactly.
The last musical I saw was 9 to 5, the Dolly.
Yes.
I saw it in London because I was like doing some shows over in Europe. And then like the night before I flew back to the States, I went, it was a ridiculous musical, but like you have to love it because it's got Dolly Parton music in it. Exactly. I mean, it was standing on its own feet. I would be like, I could have, this wasn't amazing, but it had, what is his Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman was playing her boss in it.
That's so fun.
And it was very fun. And it happened to have this, the girl who was playing kind of the Dolly Parton character, I had seen 2 years before when I toured Europe. I went and saw Kinky Boots. I got like cheap daytime matinee tickets. I was like, I'm going to see Kinky Boots on London. And she played this really fun, kooky Lauren character. And I'm so out of touch with like theater culture. Like I love musicals, but there's people who just really know it and they're in it. And it felt really cool to be like, I know that actress. I never know theater actresses. And I know her and I liked her in the last play and I like her in this one. But yeah, I mean, I'm obsessed with Dolly. So getting to just see Dolly music on the...
So wait, is there other Dolly music besides 9 to 5? And I haven't seen
it. 9 to 5. There was... God, fuck, I can't... There was one other song. Oh, it's a newer song of hers, like on one of her later albums called Backwoods Barbie.
Oh, I love that song. Yeah.
Yeah, they sing that. And then there was just a couple, I think, original musical pieces. But it opened with a video from Dolly, like being like, oh my God, I can't believe we're in London. And she says, she makes a joke about, she's like, I love the queen. I know there's going to be lots of queens at this show. Like,
yes.
And I was like, oh, she's the best.
The true best. The true best.
Like, well, if the last musical I got to see was Dolly Parton involved, I'm fine with that.
And yeah. Dustin Hoffman. I mean, I think that's such the great thing about theater too. And again, like one thing that I love about stand-up is I just love live performance. I mean, it's so irreplaceable and it has an energy that is just so special. And
yeah,
fun.
You're like part of it. Like you feel it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so to see an actor like Dustin Hoffman, I mean, that's like every time I go to New York, I feel like I have to see something. Cause it's like, actually this was in LA. I got to see Kathleen Turner, not in a musical, but she was in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Oh my God.
And it's like, you've seen Kathleen Turner act on TV and in movies, but like seeing someone that's that good of an actor perform a role like that live is wow. Like a spiritual experience, you know?
Oh, I mean, I can only imagine. That's, yeah. I didn't even like realize he was in it when we got the tickets. And then we're looking at the like playbook and stuff, playbill, whatever. I'm fucking an idiot. But, and I was like, no way. And then it was a thing where, cause I'm a fucking cynic. And I'm like, is this going to be a thing where they like plugged him in? Like that was my logic instead of going, how cool to see this big actor. I'm like, he's in a musical. Like he's really old. Is this going to be, but he was great. He is so fucking old. But like I was like, he is holding on by a thread here, but he's, like literally I was like, is he alive? Is he on puppet strings? I don't know, but it's great. I'm loving it.
Okay. So not a ringing endorsement for Dustin Hoffman, but
great, but I was like, It was one of those, you go like Dustin Hoffman, and I'm picturing like the Dustin Hoffman I think a lot of us would be picturing, which is silly because
like The Graduate or Tootsie, like it seems like that's always how he should look.
Yeah. And yeah. He's like skinny and like he just seemed frail. but like on appearance, but then he brought this energy that I was like, oh, okay. He's just fucking skinny. Like it's fine. It's not like he was like, oh, I can't do my part, you know? And getting to see him play this like sleazeball was like just so, I mean, great. It was great. It doesn't happen, you know?
Oh, God. I love that movie. Love Dolly. Love it all.
Yeah. And it was great. I was like, oh, it's cool to see as a play. What's the last musical you saw before?
Oh, good question.
Life.
It might be the Cher show. Have I seen anything in LA? It might be the Cher show. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, I feel like I asked all the questions. Is there anything else? Any musicals you don't like? Maybe even like popular ones that you're like, I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's a bad musical is The King and I. That show sucks.
The King and I.
Yeah.
I saw the movie when I was younger, I wasn't moved by it.
No, it's actually quite terrible. I mean, that was part of the season that Babs and I had all those tickets to. There was a production of The King and I. And, like, they did – I will say the costumes were good. Like, the costumes were – they were cool. So I was like, okay, I'll sit here and look
at the costumes. It's a good era-type thing to get some, like, fun costume in.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's a pretty racist show.
That makes sense, yeah. Guys, it's so long. And I'm like, yeah. And then it's just, like, the whole concept is, like – I don't even remember. Isn't she like one of someone's wives or like a king?
He has multiple wives. She comes in to tutor the kid. He has multiple wives and then they fall in love.
And it's like, oh yeah, I'm sure he's going to fall in love with 800 more people. Like, fuck exactly. You. I'm just bitter about that.
Just concept. As a show, it's just not good. Like, you know, a musical, like right before intermission, you should have a big fucking number. The last number of the show should be a big fucking number. Not The King and I. No. It's like, here's the kind of like, low stakes shitty melody number, and then they had a book scene and then intermission. Ew. Yeah, it's just a really boming bad show. Yeah, I think
you're
that's
like this you're like, it's like you want people to leave at intermission. It feels like,
yeah,
fuck. And then that's such a funny thing about I think season tickets to any type of theater, where it's like there's gonna be shows you're excited about, and then for me it's like I'm so fucking cheap about myself that it would be like, I don't even think I want to see this, but I have the tickets, so I'm going.
I will say for the most part, you would probably be pleasantly surprised. But again, like I just like musicals so much. That's like literally if they made The Phone Book a musical, I'd probably be down to watch it. But
of course.
But, but I mean, yeah, most of them are pretty cool. I mean, I think it's kind of fun about musicals is usually when they're shitty, that's also really fun to watch.
Oh yeah. It's so funny to just be like, yeah. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That you're like, someone wrote this and then was like, let's put it on stage. And people got on board with it.
Yeah, like who doesn't love a train wreck, you know?
I mean, oh, they're so fun to watch. I mean, it's just like, it's like watching when comics bomb and you're like, oh,
yeah,
be here for this.
But if they were singing while they were bombing, you'd be able to have a lot more fun.
Oh, absolutely. That's why anytime I feel myself bombing, I just turn it into a song.
There you go.
This is part of the plan. Oh, God. Fuck. All right. Well, thank you for enlightening me about your magical musical experience. I cannot believe that majestic story about a musical you wrote coming to life. And it really does sound like a fairy tale. They're like, an investor in Hawaii was like, take my mansion.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even know how to give people advice on how to write a musical. Cause I'm like, for me, we just wrote it and the investor put us in a mansion. And then.
Well, it just is one of those things where like you happen to be friends with someone who was already in that world.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of got to come in, which is great and how it works out for a lot of people, but it is interesting. Yeah. Being in that position of like, yeah, I don't really know what advice to give you.
Just be lucky.
Get lucky. But that's, it's so true that like, and it's good to have that self-awareness of like, that's so much of entertainment is like, You can be so hardworking. You can be incredibly talented. And sometimes it's like, not until this stroke of the right person coming along, the right person seeing you at the right time. It's sad that like there's so many people who go completely like almost under the radar unnoticed because some industry bigwig hasn't gone, oh, who's that? You know, like they just 100%. Haven't been in the room.
In the room where it happens.
Yes. In the room where it happens. Yes. And I think that's why with any type of artistic endeavor, you have to just enjoy doing it because
100%. Yeah.
Because I mean, like the rain cloud version of out looking at it is like that person might never be in the room to see you. And maybe you'll only get as far as you can work yourself towards. But like, if you enjoy that, then that should be okay. But also if you're working hard and creating, who knows, you might end up in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, we also like the flip side of it is none of that would have ever happened if we hadn't like followed through on this idea and actually like met up and like talked about it and then proceeded to go.
Oh, you know, yeah.
It's also like, I'm a big believer in like actually following through on shit. Like
there's so much to be said about just finishing an idea. It's yes. Just looking at like films that come out or television shows that it's like more than half the battle is actually creating the project. Like,
yes.
Because how many times do we go, oh, wouldn't this be a funny idea for a show or a bit? And then you're just like, and that's all I did for it.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, because it's like, no, who wants to sit through the shitty process of like actually having to like work through something? That's a nightmare.
And having to like critique and go, actually, this part's not that good. Rewrites. And you're like, you want it to be done.
Yeah. We like, had, there's a runner named Alexi Pappas, who's like a Olympic runner who we had on Lady to Lady. And she gave like such good advice. She was like, when you set a goal, once you set that goal, you have to stick with it. She's like, you can't decide once you're in the pressure cooker to get out because you're going to want to. So you have to tell yourself that once you're in the pressure cooker, you're going to hang out until you see it through to completion. And that really stuck with me because it's like, It's so easy for your brain to trick you in like when you get to the hard part, be like, this wasn't that good of an idea anyway. Probably, why am I doing, no one's actually going to read this, you know, but yeah. Like, no, that's the pressure cooker brain. You just got to sit there and do it anyway.
Fuck. You're so right. I love, that's great advice. Well, on that note, you mentioned your podcast. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I have a podcast called Lady to Lady.
It's which amazing.
Is super fun. It's me, Barbara Gray, and Brandy Posey, and we always have another female comic or female comedy writer on every week. And then you can check out my podcast, Brittany's Gram, which is on hiatus right now, but pretty interesting things happened over the last couple of years on that podcast. If you want to listen.
I mean, truly, I was in Malibu last night. My boyfriend has a friend who has like this incredible house in Malibu, and she invited us over for like socially distant pool hang. And I was like, oh yeah, of course, 1000%. But like, I was literally, this is so cartoonish. I was in a hot tub with one of my friends, and I was like, we're not far from Brittany. I don't know where she is, but I feel like we're close enough. We could go get her.
Someone needs to.
I mean, my gosh. You guys have done, that's a whole other podcast. It is your podcast. But like when people bring up the free Britney shit, I'm always like, okay, I know a couple people who are sort of at the forefront of that and they have a really great podcast about it. And, I mean, it's just, there's no time to talk about it, but that, the whole Britney shit is fucking crazy.
That's its own. Several cans of worms.
Yes, but everyone, if you want to go down those cans of worms, check out their Instagram.
And then I'm Testify Barker on Twitter and Instagram. I don't post that much on Instagram, but if you want to follow me there.
Yeah, and you're very funny on Twitter. So it's a great, funny Twitter follow. And I know for me personally, I can always use more funny people in my Twitter timeline.
Absolutely.
Because I'm like, some people are a little too serious and it's making me sad. All right, well, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. This was super fun.
Yay! All right, bye, everybody. There you have it, the incredible Tess Barker. Go out, find a musical investor, have them put you in a South Carolina mansion and make your musical. God, I fucking can't wait for theater to come back. I want to go to Pantages. I want to see musicals. Wear your fucking masks, you guys, so that theaters can come back. I thought about trying to get a residency at the theater in my hometown in Alaska, just to like work out an hour the way I would do at Edinburgh, but in Anchorage. I wonder if they'd let me do it. Probably not. It may not even be back ever, or by then. It'll be back eventually, right? Oh God, I need theater to come back. Okay, anyway, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If this is your first time listening, maybe this episode wasn't for you. Please, please,
do me a solid, check out a few more episodes, look for some topics that might be of more interest to you. It's such a wide variety of me learning about different things. So, you know, not every podcast episode is going to be for everyone, and I do appreciate you giving me the shot either way. And if you did like it, please subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, share it with your friends, because everyone's a little bit ignorant sometimes. Big, big thank you to John, Eric, Jean, Greg, Kathy, Terry, exclusive members of the League of Extraordinary Idiots on Patreon. You keep these episodes flowing and keep me sane. Couldn't do it without you. If you want to join the League of Extraordinary Idiots and be part of our cool monthly hangouts, bi-monthly hangouts, which means twice monthly. Is that what it means? Do I say bi-weekly? So that means every other week. Or do I say bi-monthly? That means twice a month. Whichever one, two times a month. You can get postcards from me at $10 a month, but also for $1 a month, you're getting full-length episodes. I don't post anything past an hour on the regular feed anymore. Full-length interviews and bonus episodes and clips of my stand-up that you cannot see anywhere else. You get to see everything before it's out, and that includes fully polished clips, but also workout bits. I'm gonna share audio clips of like premises I'm working on and talk through what I'm changing, and you can even see some jokes evolve throughout these clips. Yeah, so if you like stand-up, patreon.com/ignoranceisblessed. There's a link in the show notes. Follow Ignorance is Blessed at Ignorance is Blessed on Instagram to see faces to go with all the voices you're hearing on this podcast. And please keep in mind that no guest is or claims to be a representative for every person who has a similar identity. They are just one person sharing their own experience and ideas to help us get a peek at how things look from their situated position in the world. You have additional questions for one of my guests? You want to suggest a guest? Easiest way to do that won't cost you a dime or even a dollar. There's a Facebook group. Look up Ignorance's #BlessedIdiots on Facebook. Join. Post about who you want to hear. Post questions if you have follow-up questions for guests. Also, set on the notifications and you will get notifications from me about what guests we have coming up, and you can ask your questions. And I will ask them to the guest. What? What the fuck? Follow me everywhere at JMS Comedy. If you're in Alaska during Thanksgiving, Godspeed, but come see me. I'll be in Anchorage. I'll be in the Valley. I may be a few other places. I may just go get high in a hot tub in Kirkwood. I haven't fully decided, but I am very excited to go back to my hometown and see some of my friends and a few of my enemies. I don't think I have enemies. Do I have enemies? Can someone please tell me if you're my enemy? I guess they wouldn't be listening. Not to this part. Does anyone know if I have an enemy? Does someone think of me as their enemy? Oh God, I hope not. I need to make amends. What did I do? Tell me. All right. I'm spiraling. I need to edit this podcast. Listen. Thank you for your suggestions. Please keep asking questions. The more we ask, the more we learn, the more we know, and the more we know, the more we can look down on others who aren't as smart as we are. And isn't that the point? Thank you for listening. And thank you for being patient with my ignorance. See you soon, idiots.